M&M podcast. I'm Antonia.
I'm Elena.
And I'm Lily. And today we're going to be talking about chapter 19 through 25, right? And I'm just going to give a little bit of a plot summary. So in these chapters, we finally meet the character Margarita, and we find out that she's really in love with the master, and she is trying to find him, She doesn't know where he is. And I feel like for her, greed is really, like, not a thing. It's such, like, a big part of the book, but we see that she isn't really greedy at all. She cares way more about love than her, like, money and wealth. And, basically what happens is she's approached by one of the devil's, like, henchmen, Azazelo, and he gives her this, like, ointment cream that, he says, like, put this all over your body and then you'll, like, be able to find your master. And then she puts on the cream and she basically turns into a witch. And, she's, like, super happy. She feels, like, this sense of freedom that she never felt before. She leaves, like, a note to her husband about how she's, like, leaving him, basically. And she, like, flies away.
And then once she flies away, also her servant, Natasha, is there, too. She came along for the ride. So after Margarita meets Woland, who is Satan, if you guys remember, basically, Satan and the demons, they tell her that she's supposed to host a giant satanic ball full of all of these evil people, and that if she hosts perfectly, then Woland will grant her one wish. And then she does host the ball perfectly, because she's an awesome host, so she's allowed to have that one wish, but instead of wishing to find the master, she wishes that one of the guests she had met at the ball, she wanted them to have peace, and Woland grants that wish, but then he later insists that she wish something for herself, which is then when she finds the master.
So once she finds the master, Woland sends the two of them back to their old apartment to live their old life so that they can be happy together.
Yeah, so I think one of the biggest, or like a really important lens to look through basically the whole book, is Marxism, especially because we know that the Stalinist regime or the Stalinist government used, or like had said, that they were communists, basically, even if they didn't exactly go by all of the communist ideals. I feel like that's a government that people really associate communism with. And I think one really big part of it is that we see this big difference between the idea that communism is supposed to eradicate people's need for money and need for, like, material things because the government provides those things for them. But we see that all the characters are still really greedy. And there's a couple examples of that, like, when Margarita gets that magical ointment, her maid puts it on this guy, who's kind of a greedy guy, I guess, and it turns him into, like, a hog, like a pig, which I feel like everyone kind of knows that pigs have that, you know, association of being really greedy, and we kind of see, like, maybe this cream is showing people, like, who they really are on the inside, and it's, like, bringing out people's true nature. And then we kind of see, like, this really poor woman who steals a horseshoe gift that Woland gives Margarita. And that kind of makes me think, like, in this communist structure, we can still see that there are wealthy people and there are poor people where, like, Marxism is supposed to eradicate like class in general. So, yeah, do you guys have anything to add to that?
I guess this just kind of resonates with that, like, one scene that we saw in the, like, book one, where, like, Woland, like, made all that money, and they kind of didn't hesitate to just, like, take it. So that was, like, another moment where we saw everyone's, like, greed, where they kind of want more and more, but since it's supposed to be, like, a communist country, like, they don't kind of act in that way. They kind of act the complete opposite of how, like, we think they should act.
Mm-hmm.
I think also when Berlioz, the dude who got his, like, head chopped off in, like, the first chapter of the book, after he died, his entire family started, like, hounding the officials because they all wanted his apartment, and it's sort of just like, I don't know, why this, your family member just died and all you care about is his belongings. So I feel like this book has a lot to say on just, you know, how the government and how people are set up.
Yeah, and I think just even just looking at the way that the government treats people and kind of, like, what the book is trying to say, like, when at the ball we see Berlioz's head has been made into this, like, basically, like, a cup, and he's drinking, like, blood out of it, and that kind of plays into this idea of, like, people getting, like, disappeared from Russia, or people who, I guess, don't fit in with the government that get killed. We sort of see, like, the way that people are treated and the way that they're kind of, like, disrespected.
I don't know if you said this already, but the fact that Woland, like, brought in a dude who was, like, a Moscow official, who I think the dude, he, like, posed as someone who just wanted to help foreigners out, but instead he was actively turning foreigners over to the police and making sure that they got, you know, disappeared or killed. The fact that Woland made, he just, like, killed him at the ball. I don't know where I'm going with this, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. That he had some, like, moral compass, I guess, to what we would think of it.
Yeah. It's just interesting.
Yeah.
So the second lens we're gonna look through is the feminist lens, which I feel like is the lens that the book has the least amount to say on. They still say a good chunk, but I feel like you can see it most clearly when the author writes about witches and liberation. Like, before she gets, you know, the magical face cream from Zezolo, Margarita feels very, like, stifled in her old life. Like, she doesn't really like all her material belongings or her status, and it's not until, like, she meets, you know, the demon and she gets the face cream that she feels confident enough to just, like, throw away society's expectations of her. Like, it says that Margarita felt herself free of everything on page 229, and then a page later it says she had a completely unburdened soul. And I just want to, like, mention quickly, like, technically she does only feel, like, liberated when she goes to, like, hang out with the quote-unquote evil people, but since in this book Satan and, like, his demons aren't shown to be purely good or evil, I don't really think the author was trying to say, oh, women can only be free if they're, like, hanging out with Satan, you know? Like, I don't think that was his takeaway about feminism. And another thing, Margarita as a character, I think she is one of the only woman characters in the book besides, you know, the red-headed vampire lady. But Margarita is just a strong character, and she's not a typical damsel in distress. Like, she literally decides to go to Satan and host his giant party for him just so she can, like, drag the master back and, like, knock some sense into him. And even though she is shown to be selfless, like, when she gives up her wish to help somebody else, she can stand up for her own. Like, the cat, the giant cat, Behemoth, who is also a demon, who is, you know, a demon, is scared of her because when he interrupted her, she, like, hit him on the head. And for the rest of, like, the chapters, whenever he was with her, he'd, like, stand at the opposite side of the room so she wouldn't hit him again. And I just found that funny.
Yeah, and sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, no, I was done.
I actually have two things that I was thinking about. And the first thing I was thinking about was kind of, like, how in the beginning of the book, when we see all those ladies where their, like, dresses disappear, like, remember that part?
Yeah.
We kind of see, like, they're really, like, ashamed and everyone's sort of, like, laughing at them because they're, like, naked. But then when Margarita, she, like, when she's flying on her broom out of her, like, house, kind of, like, leaving her old life behind, she, like, rips off her clothes and, like, throws them on the ground. And, like, flies away naked. And I think it's kind of, like, that difference between, I don't know, I just thought that was interesting that we saw, like, nakedness being really shameful. And then we saw, like, her being naked as being, like, a more free thing. And also the women at the ball were all naked, too. So it's kind of the difference where we see, like, maybe the rules are different for Satan with, like, what he considers to be, like, shameful and not. So, yeah.
It ties back into the thoughts on, like, greed, because the reason why the women's dresses disappeared is because they kept taking dresses from Roland,
mm-hmm.
because they wanted extra fancy dresses. So because they kept, like, because they were so greedy when the clothes disappeared, they were like, oh my gosh, this is so awful for me. But Margarita was like, I don't care about my material possessions. I just want to meet Satan and also get the love of my life back.
Yeah. So. And then...
All the other women at the ball, they were naked too, right?
Yeah.
Do you think, like, because she felt so liberated, because it was kind of the opposite of what society finds acceptable, like, do you think Roland was trying to liberate them in a way? The woman that, like, whose dresses disappeared.
Maybe.
Or he could have just been trying to make fun of them. I don't really understand motivations, to be honest.
Yeah, and I feel like, to me, the whole thing really reminds me of, not sort of, like, the Christian Satan of, like, he is the most evil person in the world, but more like, the Church of Satanism, where they have these ideas about, like, sins don't exist and, like, people should, like, be liberated and those sorts of things, where, like, we have ideas about how Satan is, but then, like, the actual, like, Church of Satan is really different.
That actually makes a lot of sense for, like, this take on him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because I feel like we see... Oh, my God, my dog's barking. But, like, we see Satan in some religions being seen as, like, this all-evil thing, but then, like, people who actually, like, worship Satan, you think that they're, like, crazy, but I think it's more about, like, liberation and, like, you know, letting go of this idea of, like, religious shame.
Oh, I have one more thing to say. I lied. When Natasha becomes, she puts the face cream on herself, and she turns the dude into a hog. I'm not exactly sure how that ties in, but I think it does tie into the feminist lens.
Well, because you know when people are like, men are pigs.
Yeah,
true.
The author was like, I see women saying men are pigs, and I agree with them.
Especially because it was right before, or right after, he asked Natasha to, like, have sex with him for money.
Yeah.
She got her revenge.
I know this is, like, the bare minimum of, like, being a male author, but the fact that Margarita is, like, actually a full-grown woman in her 30s and not like some 19-year-old college student, I sort of appreciated that, because I feel like in a lot of books they'll have like this really smart educated dude or whatever, and he's like, I'm so smart, and then when he does fall in love with a woman, it's because she's like 18 and also naive and innocent. But Margarita's not like that, and I realize it is the bare minimum, but I'm still happy with it anyways.
Yeah, especially when it's like an older, like, married man, you'd think that he would fall in love with like a younger woman.
Yeah, and I think there's only an age difference of like 5 years. Like, he's mid-30s and she's early-30s or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's not too bad.
Yeah, I was just pleasantly surprised when I found out that she wasn't, you know, a teenager.
Especially the time period this was written in.
Yeah, since it was written in, like, the 30s.
Yeah, like, I feel like younger women in relationships was way more normal.
Mm-hmm. And especially, like, it was always younger women, right? Like, you had to have children at, like, way younger age. Yeah. So it's interesting that, like, they're not, like, this stereotypical of what, like, you would think for that time. Okay, so now moving on to the new historicist lens, something that we've talked about a lot before is Stalinist Russia, which is a big thing in this book, because like we said before, the whole entire story is kind of a satire on Stalinist Russia and its different flaws. We see this with like the devil taking advantage of the citizens and exposing like their greed and how easily they follow orders. The devil also appeals to people's greed, even though that they're not supposed to want for anything, since it is like a communist structure. And another thing that we see is like how people get disappeared by the devil and the officers in like the recent chapters that we read. Something like, I did some research because like on page 287, Woland says manuscripts don't burn, and apparently that's actually like a popular saying now in Russian society because of the popularity of the book The Master and Margarita. Something like from that is that in Russia at the time, a lot of artists had to censor their work so that they didn't offend the government. So saying like the manuscripts don't burn was supposed to kind of show the authenticity of like the master's work and how his wasn't censored. And in that way, I guess it held more value, I guess, in the eyes of the author. This quote also shows that like true art never dies, even when it is stifled by society and the conventions around an artist, with how like during the time art was very like strict. So a lot of the time when we think of art, we think it's like self-expression or like kind of very fluid with its definition, but because of the government, it had to be like a lot more restricted. The quote also kind of hints at like the process of how during Stalinist Russia, many writers memorized their work to avoid trouble with the government. And I actually found out that the author Bulgakov, he burned the first draft of The Master and Margarita in 1930 because he lost hope in having any publishings, because just like all this strictness surrounding like any form of art or like writing that was too like out there in like the mind of the government. So he felt like very bad about himself just because he couldn't get anything published, and like people were turning him down for his plays too, and like really critiquing him harshly. And so he tried to write The Master and Margarita again from memory. I wonder how different, like, the first draft was from, like, what we've now read. But I thought it was interesting how kind of, like, the master, because he also had a manuscript that he burned, so it's kind of like a reflection of the author in, like, what happened with his book when he burnt it. And I also thought it was interesting how how Margarita was so passionate about the master's work, and how the Master and Margarita, the book, actually ended up being published by Bulgakov's wife after he died. And, like, a quote that I had from, like, Margarita was, I put my whole life into this work, on page 292. And I just thought it was interesting how, like, passionate she was for his work. And I wonder if that's what the master thought Margarita the author thought his wife thought of his work, or if Margarita's supposed to be like his kind of ego boost of himself. I don't know. I feel like the end was kind of confusing, but if that's what that's my point.
Going back to what you said about writing it again from memory, I feel like the quote "manuscripts don't burn" would make sense as a second draft, because after the master in the book burns his manuscript, once he meets Woland, like, that's what he says. Woland says, oh, manuscripts don't burn, and he just, like, snaps his fingers and the finished manuscript is in his hands again. So I feel like that was the author, I don't know, trying to say to the reader, no matter how many times you destroy a work, as long as it's authentic, it won't be forgotten. So I feel like that was probably in the second draft, but as for the rest of the stuff, I don't know.
Yeah, and, like, one thing I was kind of thinking about was how we see, like, in our government, at least, like, the American government, that the arts don't get, like, a lot of funding, whereas, like, in this book, we see that they actually do get, like, a lot of funding. Like, they had that whole house with, like, a restaurant in it, and it was, like, all fancy and stuff. So I think it was kind of saying, like, all that money and all that funding that they were getting from the government sort of came with the price of, like, not being able to write about what they wanted to write about. And kind of, like, if you're getting money from the government to make art, then it can't be authentic.
That's a good point. I completely forgot about the whole, what did they call it? The Mozlet or something?
Yeah.
The writers' organization.
We're at the 25-minute mark.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. Well, I guess that's a wrap for episode 2 of The Master and Margarita. Podcast.
Yeah.
Wait, I just realized we don't have a name for this one.
We can.
Oh,
think
I feel
of
like
one.
Our title should be "To the Devil and Beyond." I feel like we should just keep making our titles the different quotes for they mention the devil.
Yeah. Okay, that's a good idea.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening.
Yeah. Thank you.